Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I am very pleased to introduce to you today a book written with a lay investor, that is you and I, at heart. It's written by a seasoned equity analyst. You've probably caught him on CNBC airing his views. And unlike many other books on investing, this author understands that dry stats are going to put us to sleep and that terms like EBITDA and CBO and CDO might, and he writes it himself, so I'm quoting the book, misguide more than inform. There is so much information out there. How can you make sense of it all as an investor, particularly if you're trying to understand what's changed and what hasn't, about where opportunities lie as we emerge from this pandemic? So many books aim to communicate clearly, but this one actually executes that goal of making complex financial concepts understandable, with chapter titles like Are Diamonds an Investor's Best Friend? Is There a Silver Lining to COVID? This book is titled Investing in a COVID Era, and I'm so pleased to welcome author Nirgunan Thiruchelvam to Money and Me. Good morning. How are you doing?
Morning, Michelle. It's a great pleasure to be on your show.
Well, I love your book. I really, really like how at the start you acknowledge that even as an equity analyst who looks at reams of financial statements, it's the story of stocks that matters. Do you try to bring the storytelling element to this book?
That's correct. It's a very important function for anybody who's trying to convey information, whether you're in politics or in equity analysis or in preaching. You have to convey a concept through a story. It's something subliminal in the human nature that we connect to stories more than statistics.
And as an equity analyst, how do you do this? Connect with the heart and head?
You need to be proficient in the raw data. You need to know the facts. But if you convey the facts in a narrative, it becomes much more effective. We remember stories more than we remember numbers.
Absolutely. And there's some really masterful storytelling in this book. So what will an investor in Singapore, Nirgunan, be able to take from your book that's going to help him or her simplify their investment journey?
First of all, you need to understand that we are in the midst of an extraordinary event, COVID-19, for two reasons. For one thing, there's been massive disruption into the economy. At one point in the US, one in five of the workforce, one in five of the workers was out of work in the midst of the worst of the pandemic. This was unprecedented and was only seen during the depths of the depression of the 1930s. On the other hand, we've seen a stock market boom where the stock market indices are at record levels. So to quote Charles Dickens, it's the best of times and it has been the worst of times. How do we understand investing in such a complex environment is the prevailing theme of the book.
So you write, you know, as with Hurricane Katrina, COVID-19 has been a godsend for a new class of securities, the virus stocks, you coined them, which have prospered during the lockdown. And these include Zoom and Grubhub and Peloton. So will this book help us understand if stocks that did well during COVID, Zoom, for example, will continue to do well as we reopen?
That is a very vital question. They have gone viral during the virus. It has about 200 million users at this point, which is maybe 100 times what they were had before the pandemic. So it's been a godsend for them. The question is, will we continue to use Zoom as intensely as we have been using over the last year in the post-pandemic environment? The answer is likely to be no. For example, let's take this own interview. We hope that once the restrictions associated with COVID are eased, we could be doing this in person and I would be in your studio as opposed to be doing it through a video link.
Yes. So you see.
Therefore,
go ahead.
Absolutely. So the earnings multiple that Zoom commands are about 1,500 times what their prospective operating earnings are.
Mm-hmm.
It is many multiples above what you would normally pay for any company. People are buying in to the growth that has been exaggerated by the pandemic. On the other hand, once the pandemic eases, people would be traveling much in a much more freer fashion than was the case during the pandemic. So you would be better off buying something like a taxi company, a transport company like ComfortDelGro, which is still about 50% below its pre-pandemic levels, because people will be using the taxi more rather than using Zoom as much as they are using it today. I might use the taxi to come to your studio.
Mm-hmm.
You might use the taxi to meet somebody in Raffles Place as opposed to having a Zoom call. You might get on a plane to meet someone as opposed to having a Zoom conversation with a client.
There's a lot there to unpick. So what do you think? Do you think food delivery stocks are still going to be hot? This is an area you cover in this book.
That's right. So food delivery is an excellent example of a theme that has very strong fundamentals. People were going to use food delivery because more people had smartphones, more people appreciated the convenience of ordering food. But the growth in the food delivery numbers has been exponential during COVID. So there's a company in China called Meituan Jianping.
Mm-hmm.
Meituan is the world's largest food delivery provider. It does about 25 million meals in a single day, which is many times what the number is for the rest of the market put together. So this is the granddaddy, the dominant big gorilla in food delivery. It is barely profitable. But the question is, will they continue to have this growth during the post-pandemic era? Because people will want to have meals in restaurants, to actually walk to the hawker centers or the equivalents in China, as opposed to ordering meals online.
Absolutely. So when it comes to airlines, you know, people expecting travel bubbles to open up as economies open up. And, you know, when it comes to our national airline, Singapore Airlines, is it too late to jump on it? I believe you've spoken on Singapore Airlines recently.
That's right. So SIA is a classic case of a stock which has been derated by the pandemic. The airline numbers ground to a halt. The number of air miles or the air traffic fell 98%. But the stock has actually performed very well with the easing of the pandemic restrictions. And it's likely that it will continue to do well because there's this reverse effect. Just like the stock fell when the pandemic hit, with the easing of the pandemic restrictions, it's going to rise by an exponential number. So for every, say, 1% potential rise in their revenue, the stock might rise about 2%. So we could have a multiplier effect as the restrictions are eased.
What about AirAsia? It's hit its one-year high. Same story for AirAsia?
Well, AirAsia is an interesting name because it's at a different point in the market where it targets the low-cost traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And the stock itself has some stock-specific issues. But let's speak generally about the entire airline industry. It's no secret that with the end of the pandemic, there would be better value in the airline sector than in a number of other sectors, which have done very well during the pandemic. So with the recovery, you need to go after everything that's done badly during the pandemic.
Yeah. And people also interested in what's been doing well and where, you know, it's likely to go, like e-commerce, for example. Now, your first chapter in this book is on C, the e-commerce and gaming company. And you have a postscript on that chapter. You say, C Limited has defied my skepticism. And I wonder what you think of C Limited today, you know, given the news that it's going to be moving into e-commerce.
C Limited is a phenomenal success. it's one of the champions of what we call the baby Amazons. These are emerging market companies that are replicating Amazon's success in developing markets or emerging markets, where they have adopted some of the principles that Amazon perfected in the West or in the US and taken it to places like Indonesia or Brazil or China or India. Having said that, the valuation of a number of these names, particularly C, has been in excess of what can be justified. They're trading, in this case, at about 20 times revenue, and the company is struggling to generate any profits. Therefore, you need to be very discerning in distinguishing between the larger concept of more people using e-commerce versus investing in the e-commerce players. Just because more people are shopping online doesn't mean that the valuation that you see for the baby Amazons can be sustained indefinitely.
So you still think that C's overall cash burn is dangerous?
A cash burn in any company cannot be sustained indefinitely. It is the case that many of these companies have been opportunistic. They've been raising money at the top of the market, where they've made advantages of the exaggerated stock price to issue stock and make hay while the sun shines. So they have a lot of money on their balance sheet, which is unlikely to run out in the next year or two. But if they continue to bleed the cash flow statement, it is unlikely that they can continue to sustain itself. You cannot burn cash indefinitely. It's one of the laws of commerce.
The book is as brilliantly lucid as he is. As you can hear him, Nirgunan Thiruchelvam is joining us. He's the author of a book titled Investing in a COVID Era, and it is targeted at the lay investor. There's a whole sweep of articles in this book. The book is actually a compilation of articles that you wrote for publication The Edge. But tell us how it is more than just a grab of some of the articles that you wrote. What did you have in mind for the investor when you curated these articles?
I want the investor to identify with investment themes without the use of jargon. I want the investors to identify with stories. And I want investors to look beyond the headlines into broader themes. One factor that you need to be very aware of is with a phenomenal stock market boom, it's often the case that there are scams. It's often the case that great booms are followed by bus, and booms attract fraudsters and scamsters. In the book, we talk about a very famous con artist, possibly the most famous con artist of all time, a man called Ivar Kruger in Sweden. He was a Swedish national who was known as the Match King in the 1920s. He was a path-breaking person as far as he made the normal safety matches that we use today, a mass market product. In those days, it was like the iPhone. It was a product that very few people had anticipated, and it popularized matches in a way people had not conceived of before. He had a monopoly on matches in Europe and was at one time one of the richest people in the world. However, it was later revealed with the depression of the 1930s that a lot of his sales were fictitious and that he had hid some of the debt that he had on the balance sheet through a complex network of companies, of shell companies. So a number of the financial techniques that we are familiar with today were perfected by this con artist, and eventually his empire, his match empire, collapsed and he committed suicide. So a con artist of Kruger's magnitude is instructive for us to be discerning. We need to watch out for fictitious sales. We need to watch out for companies that seem to be growing a lot quicker than you would think are acceptable. We need to watch out for companies that are looking to hide leverage. This is something the retail investor needs to be absolutely aware of.
Yeah, I think when we were talking off air before this show, you did mention to me that you believe that where there is volatility, there is scandal.
Yes, that's correct.
Need to look out for that.
There is, we have seen a number of scandals even in this market. Last year, we saw the marine fuel company led by Mr. O.K. Lim reveal that they had $4 billion of losses. There are allegations of fraud surrounding that marine fuel giant, where a complex system of fictitious sales seems to have exaggerated the sales, and leverage has been raised on the basis of fictitious sales. Mm. These are some of the issues that come out during a great boom and during a bust. So we've seen all that taking place over the last year. We've seen dizzying stock market valuations, as well as companies going under because of the exposure from COVID.
All right, I want to take Nirgunan and listeners now to that thin strip of land that connects the Red Sea to the Mediterranean, where a giant ship is stranded, evergreen. It's stuck there blocking traffic despite best efforts of tugboats and dredges to move it. Nirgunan, your thoughts on how this blockage in the Suez Canal could impact commodities and markets in general?
The Suez is a very important artery in global trade. When it was unleashed or launched in the 1860s, it basically cut the travel time by 2 weeks. You had to go around the coast of Southern Africa in those days to reach Europe from Asia and vice versa. The Suez Canal blockage may cause disruption to world trade and may drive up the prices of commodities. This is an interesting juncture for such a blockage to take place because over the last 6 years, there's been tremendous underinvestment in commodity infrastructure, whether it is oil infrastructure, gas infrastructure, even agricultural commodities have suffered from a lack of investment because we've been in a bear market. One of the rules of commodity investing is that bear markets lead to bull markets, and bull markets lead to bear markets. There's a constant cycle of boom and bust. And we may be at an inflection point where commodity prices could rise very rapidly, with the Suez blockage being an indication of the tightness of the market.
What is the likely impact of the blockage? We saw the price of Brent crude spiking on news of the blockage in the Suez. Today, it looks like traders taking a little bit more of a sanguine view on Brent crude. What is your view?
Well, the immediate issue of the blockage in the Suez Canal will probably be sorted out sooner rather than later. It could be in a number of days, it could be in a week. Mm-hmm. But while that is sorted out, you need to look at the big picture, the medium-term or long-term factor, which I alluded to earlier, which is that commodities are due for a rally, given the underinvestment in the last 6 years, plus the COVID-19 ending, where the easing of restrictions from COVID-19 could lead to more people traveling, hence there'll be more demand for oil, more people going to parties, hence there'll be more demand for agricultural products. There could be more demand for restaurants, and there could be higher demand for some of the commodities which we associated with dining, like wheat, corn, and so on and so forth.
All right. When it comes to precious metals, just coming back to your book, you have a whole chapter on silver. What is your take today on where silver is headed?
Well, silver is an interesting commodity, which is that it's the poor cousin of gold. Of these two precious metals, people always talk about the gold price. Even our own language is driven by gold. We talk about Michel Martin's presentation skills are worth their weight in gold. We talk about the gilded cage. We talk about a golden future. But we very rarely use silver in the same breath, in the same expressions. But silver has always been a store of value in the same way that gold has. It's been used as a medium of exchange in some cases, in some points in our history. And unlike gold, it actually has real-world applications. We could use silver for some of the iPhone features. Silver could also be used for medicinal purposes. It actually has a real-world application where gold is mainly an ornamental purpose, has a mainly ornamental purpose or as a store of wealth. Silver has actually fallen in real terms over the last 40 years. So the height of the silver boom was in the early 80s, when there was a cornering of the silver market by the Hunt brothers. Since then, there's been a drop in silver prices in real terms. But with the COVID restrictions easing and with restrictions in the supply of silver because of the underinvestment that we've seen over an extended period, it is likely that silver might outperform gold.
Okay, that was gold for us here on this show. You're on Money and Me. Nirgunan Thiruchelvam is my guest. He is the author of the book that I am reading today, Investing in a COVID Era. Now, before we let you go, because you're a fountain of fantastic information for us, Nirgunan, you start this book with a story of how you pitched the story of rubber enthusiastically at the start of your career. So where do you expect rubber to go, given we are still pulling on gloves for those vaccinations?
Rubber is due for a bounce back, pun intended, because there's been underinvestment in rubber supply and rubber demand is picking up with the use of rubber gloves, as well as greater traveling that's going to take place with the recovery. So there'll be more demand for cars. With more demand for cars, you would need to replace your tires. And when you want to buy tires, you need to get rubber. We may see rubber bouncing back. Rubber has a long gestation period. It takes 7 years to reach maturity. Actually, it could take up to 10 years to reach maturity once you start planting. So whoever gets into rubber needs to take a long-term view. You can't add rubber supply very easily. You can't turn it on like you can for a number of other agricultural products. So rubber is due for a rally, and we are in the center of the rubber trade right now here in Singapore, which is the fulcrum of Southeast Asia.
So wide-ranging this discussion has been, as is your book, which is brilliant and makes important investment topics accessible for us all. The book that I'm reading today is Investing in the COVID Era. You just heard Nirgunan Thiruchelvam on the show. Nirgunan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're on Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to listen to the show all over again, you certainly can. Download us on Spotify. The playlist you want is Your Money.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.